Against whom are they playing?
Oh, against Düsseldorf.
So the old rivalry, Cologne against Düsseldorf.
Yeah, they're screaming a lot and calling each other names, but it's really interesting because Düsseldorfers are much better in football, soccer actually, which I hate to admit.
Okay, thank you for the insight. Good luck. Thank you, Tina. This was a little insight of our soccer team, the sports going on this field. Well, even sport is going on this field. This is interesting on HAL 2001. Okay.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, oh, this is Ingo. And we are broadcasting live from the football championship. And right now the game is over. The swimming is great here. We have a success winning team. So which team is winning team now? Difficulties, they're finding out who has found the fact they have counted the goals, but it seems that the crew of difficulties has found the game, but we still figure it out, maybe there will be some, I try to get some of the winning team now, the Salone of the winning difficult team, how was the game for you? Yeah, it was great, really great. So,
okay, thank you, Ingo. I don't think we understood much a lot of you, but I think the mood is great over there at the sports field, and thank you for the direct connection.
Your own shoes.
Yeah, hey, here's Radio Space Station 5.org, and this is Sam, and we are at here, and I may wait. We wait for the ASCII News Hour, which they said they need another 5 minutes, so just wait another 5 minutes. So the ASCII crew will take over the mics and will broadcast their ASCII News Hour. Well, until then, I can give you an impression about what happened the last hours. We had wiretapping Facts and Figures by Morris Wessling on stage 1 an hour ago. And it was a little bit specific of the Netherlands, the rights and the rules here in Netherlands, how ISP are forced to implement surveillance systems, telecommunication surveillance systems here in the Netherlands. And then we had on stage 2 the daily security practice at an ISP with Scott McIntyre. Well, it was so crowded, so I didn't get to manage to get a place in there, so it seems to be a highlight on the day today. Well, perhaps someone can find someone who tells us what happened there and what was told there. Seems to be an interesting lecture there. Well, ASCII crew, how long do you take? Well, another minute? Okay. So we will wait.
live, and we are at the table outside the ASCII tent for all the people who want to join us. Here at the table are Andy Muller and Tim, and they're very interesting people, and they're going to tell themselves why they're interesting. Well, I think they're interesting. Andy, hi. Welcome here.
Hi.
Can you tell me shortly, or all the listeners, who you are and what you're doing here?
So I'm Andy Muller-Magoon. I'm a spokesman of KS Computer Club for about 10 years now. And also I'm on the European elected so-called director of ICANN. ICANN is the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, which is some kind of a United States government company for controlling the namespace of the Internet, which is a long story, but okay.
That's the dot-com thing, the dot something.
Yeah. In a way, KS Computer Group is an institution for the freedom of information, and ICANN is an institution for the controlling of the Internet, which is kind of the opposite. But that's a long story.
Okay, well, we'll get there maybe later on. Hi, Tim. Who are you?
Okay, my name's Tim. Among other things, I'm a film producer and filmmaker, and next week I'm going to Kosovo to make a film about the only alternative festival in Kosovo, which is going to be featuring performers and musicians from many different countries, and will be a fantastic event. I'm interested in Echelon, and that's what I'm going to talk about a bit later on and explain why that's relevant to people.
Okay, thank you. You had a game or something, right, with Echelon?
That's right, yeah. I'm going to try and teach the rules. So it's an unusual game.
So we get there later on.
That's right.
Okay. Andy, I don't understand much about the names, the .com and the .biz we're getting now and stuff like that. How does that work for a simple person like me? Tell me.
Let's say like this: the namespace of the internet starts from the last letter. So if you have an email, blah 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 .com, so the resolver, the technical part that looks at that, starts at .com, and that's called the top level domain. We have two kinds of that: that's country coded top level domains, which is DE for Germany, NL for Holland, and so on. And the so-called generic ones, where we now have only .com.org.net, and we start to become some others. And ICANN is the institution that controls the so-called root zone file. That's the file where these top-level domains are being attached to the service where those second-level domains, so that's those who are then at .de or .com or .whatever, are located.
How are the dot something being decided for? Because I can think about a million dot somethings.
Yeah.
So how and are you deciding about this?
In a way, yes, but not really. So.
In a way, yes, but not really. Explain.
So originally, the internet was the internet's namespace here. This procedure was a one-man show. It's called the IANA, the Internet Authority for Names Assigning, and the guy was called John Postel. He was more or less one of those old-style hippies who invented the internet through the RFC process, which is an open process, and so on. And but with the increase and with the more importance of the internet's economic and political and so on use, they discussed about that. It couldn't be that one man who was a hippie and who was not wearing even shoes and most of the time for the year would be the one who controlled this central resource called the namespace.
Yes.
And so originally there was a discussion that this function and the policies for getting new names and so on should be run at the United Nations, and there should be founded a new treaty organization to handle this. So for the original guy running this was also an employee at this function at the Department of Defense of the United States government. Of course, the United States government didn't like the idea to have this at the United Nations, because that's one of the international organizations where they don't have that level of control they have in other so-called international organizations.
Yes.
And so they found ICANN. ICANN is a California-based company made by the United States government, more or less, and which does these policy questions with something called, for example, the Governmental Advisory Committee. So there is an institution where the other countries and their national governments can send out a representative, and then they have some kind of a working circle, and they all have the feeling that they have the power at the end of the day, they don't. They only have a consultancy job, and the United States government is the institution that makes the decision. But the United States government is quite, professional and giving people the feeling on oh, you're also important and we'll
deal with us, and so on.
So, and ICANN is an institution which is paid by the registrars, more or less, so by those people at the end of the day who register a domain name and so on, and which makes the policies for this namespace. Originally, I could also imagine about thousands of top-level domains, but ICANN wants to keep control on this for special matters. For on the political side, of course, the less namespaces he has, the easier it is to apply control on that.
Mm-hmm.
And also there is a commercial interest, because as most of the capitalistic logic is, you have to get things out in a very small amount, otherwise you can't hold the price up. So, I mean, that's why people destroy potatoes and so on, and butter and all those, you know, so-called overproduced things, which just means to keep the prices at a special level, you have to destroy that stuff. And this means in the namespace, ICANN had a process to extend the namespace, because the original company running the org.net and .com space is Network Solutions VeriSign, and they got so much money and so much influence on the ICANN process that it becomes some kind of a monopolistic mafia style discussion round there. And it was a little bit getting too obvious, so they had to do something. And then they ask for papers to suggest namespaces, and if you want to make your personal suggestion for a new namespace, that would have been possible, but you would have to pay $50,000 for making the suggestion.
My God, so you have to be very rich to make any chance to have something like that.
Right, I mean, that's the American style of doing it as a capitalistic game. Anyhow,
yes.
So there were 43 proposals of people who paid that fee to make the suggestion, and 7 were even selected, but those 7, most of them are still waiting for the contracts to do so, because of course there's a lot of control, for example, through the intellectual property process, that at the first 100 or 150 days of the existence of a namespace in the internet, only trademark holders are allowed to register and not normal internet users.
Yeah, so how many are they going to get more? Because I understood all those .com and .net, .org are getting full. So
in a way, yes.
You get like .biz, I think. .sex?
Yeah, no, .sex.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah, that's a good question. So ICANN says that they only selected 7 new top-level domains to have something called a proof of concept. So that means to gain experience in how things would work out if you expand this namespace of the internet, which has never been expanded for the last so-and-so years, and now with some namespaces, and what will happen. So we will have to be very careful, they say.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a proposal, for example, for .xxx, not for .sex, but I mean .xxx is quite obvious enough. And they didn't select it because I think the American prudity you always have to see. And ICANN, of course, tries to, whatever it does, it tries to be suitable to American policies in a way, because you still have the so-called dominant authority of the United States Department of Commerce. So it's not a direct control of the United States government on the decisions. It's they are mentioned very well to not get into trouble with it, because at the end of the day, if ICANN wants to, for example, extend the namespace with a top-level domain, it's ICANN not directly doing it. It's asking the Department of Commerce to do it.
Hmm. Wow. That's the whole story. I understand now a little bit more about how it works. So, Tim, how gets Echelon in use? I don't know how to make a switch from Andy to you, because it's very hard thing.
We had a subject in between which has nothing to do with ICANN, and that was the Cybercrime Treaty, or in Germany we call it the Echelon Ermächtigungsgesetz, or to try to say this in English, it means the law that will allow Echelon to work for the next 30 years on the internet, or however long period of years. So currently we have something which is not directly to deal with the ICANN or our domain name system. It more has to do with the hacking community, because of the growing importance of the internet for so-called economic use. And you might have found out there has been all those companies claiming to be running so-called e-commerce or e-business, and most of the people didn't never find out whatever shall that be, e-commerce or e-business.
Yeah.
and those concepts didn't work out, so people are getting out of money and so on, and now they claim the reason why it didn't work out is security. And so happening is they try to, the United States government once more tries to hear, the Council of Europe tries to pass a resolution called the Cybercrime Treaty, or Cybercrime Convention, that will not only handle so-called illegal activities where a computer is used as a tool, for example, denial of service attack or hacking into a computer, whatever, but also tools themselves are forbidden. So a tool, if I write a hacking tool to find out if my computer is secure or not, if it does what the producer of the software told me or it does not that, then already the producing of the tool might be a crime under this treaty. And so that's how Tim and I got more or less together at this table, because we had a workshop yesterday on this cybercrime stuff.
Yes.
And we have a little bit the problem that the Council of Europe more or less already passed this treaty, and we will have to take care on the national implementations of this, that we don't get, for example, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which also already makes it illegal to distribute information on how to put a technical mechanism for copyright protection away.
Mm-hmm,
so if I explain you on how to decode a DCSS encrypted or a CSS encrypted DVD, or if I tell you how to put away that copy protect mechanism, if I make a lecture here on that and the DMCA is here applies, then that's illegal. And that's what happened in the United States Hackers Conference just a few weeks ago at the DEF CON, that a Russian hacker told something about how the Adobe Acrobat protection mechanism worked, and he was arrested just for making a lecture.
Oh my God. Is he still in jail?
No, he just got out for 50,000 bail.
Yeah.
But this means they are still investigations against him and so on. So it will, of course, for hackers be also in the future be able to get into the United States of America, but the question is, will we have the possibility to get out?
And, they will keep you there, claim they're yours, so
and
theirs.
And what now happens is more or less that America wants this law and some of its other laws applies to apply everywhere on the planet, and that's this cybercrime treaty stuff. And I guess Tim wanted to have this structural question catalog he holds not in his hand but on his desk.
Yes.
And maybe
I will
maybe
give
he
the mic
say
to
something.
I give the mic to Tim so he can continue.
Okay, so Andy, I'd like to ask you whether you think that given that we're at a conference with a lot of experts in internet security, is this law really going to change anything in terms of the security?
In a way, yes, because it will make it impossible to talk freely about the problems. So, I mean, security-based obscurity is not security. It's like I lock my house and I leave a window open somewhere, but I just hope no one sees that window. And I make it illegal to talk about that open window, because that would be a danger for my security. So, of course, I could lock that window, and that would be improve the security. And we have a similar situation here with the cybercrime treaty, because if we don't have tools to find out what's really inside of our computers, and if we are not able to read the code that runs our machines, then we cannot say if our machines are secure or not. We cannot even say if they work or not. We can just suspect them of doing things, but we do not really know. We can, you know, just have an idea of what's happening, but don't really know it. And so it's for security, normally it would be necessary to talk about the problems in a friendly way. And if we have the cybercrime treaty, it will be very hard to have openly available information on problems and also software that shows up these problems, because knowing always is one thing and trying it out and learning it is something different. So it will make things things in computer fields more insecure, but it will also do something else. So the alternative way of the government of reaching so-called computer security is surveillance. It means the definition of computer security becomes a question of the definition of the government. And this means the systems are still insecure. We're not allowed to check it out, but they are still insecure. and the security against so-called illegal or, let's say, unauthorized access becomes a question of definition of who is doing it. So if I go around and hack some computer, of course I might be imprisoned for it because of the surveillance of the government, but if the government itself, or let's say some special governmental organizations, wants to do some so-called extra legal action, they might do this because the computers are insecure and they have the definition through this surveillance technology. So it's no more obvious what's happening then.
So should computer companies be worried about this because it's going to make it more difficult for them to develop new products?
In a very important manner. So the industry currently is based on, let's say, software that is problematic, but people working there who know about the problems. And lots of security people inside companies, of course, use hacker tools to find out if their systems are secured against computers. They hack their own firewalls, they test it, they run attacks on their own machines to find out what's really happening. And if these tools are illegal to distribute and are no more available, then those companies have less chances to find out what's really happening, and this means their computers become, in the effect, more insecure.
One of the problems is that of dual criminality, as from what you and Gus were saying yesterday, and that means that you could be doing something that's perfectly legal in the Netherlands or Germany or somewhere else, but if it, say, offends against American law, you could be extradited to America. So it puts you in a very awkward position.
Yeah, that's also one of the problems with this treaty, that it gives the possibility to sanction people for acting they have been doing in their own land completely legal, but illegal in another land. So we have a long discussion in Germany, for example, on Nazi propaganda, which means there are American citizens who are completely legal to distribute Nazi material on web servers located in the United States. And German government is a little bit upset about this because they don't see that this control doesn't work, that they need to invest in media competence, in the ability to filter for the people. So what they want is control, and they try to push the United States to do something, but United States, I mean, everything we can say worse about United States, but they still have this so-called freedom of speech, which allows some things that are maybe not so bad. And so what was happening here is the German government made a step saying that even an Australian citizen acting in his homeland complete legal, it doesn't mean the Germans cannot prosecute him or cannot even start to run investigation against him. So it means it will change nothing. But if he wants to enter Germany, he will be arrested for this.
So
once more. Mm-hmm. But this also could, of course, mean that if German students do something very legal in Germany, and that's studying politics, let's say the politics of the Republic of China, and then they, as a tourist, go to China, they might be shooted when entering the country, because that's the way China might, you know, apply this German principle on their specific sensitiveness.
So it's an aspect of globalization, an unpleasant aspect, that you can be prosecuted in another country, although you didn't break the law in your own country. And I'd like to ask you, who is behind this very badly thought out legislation, and why are they trying to impose it now?
That's a very interesting question. What's happening here is that Cybercrime Treaty is not a document of the European Parliament. It's the Council of Europe. The Council of Europe has some other countries in it also. And the document is only available in English. There's no national translations on it. And of course, the United States pushing other countries a lot, because they started already to implement the features that are in this so-called Cybercrime Treaty. For example, we have this DMCA paragraph saying that you're not allowed to distribute tools on to put copy protection mechanisms away, and that's the Cybercrime Treaty's tools chapter. and we have other examples. So it seems quite obvious here that the United States wants to push other European countries to implement their own laws, and this is a field we always have to see. The politicians don't understand the internet, they don't understand the techniques, and they do almost everything. If you just make some clandestine operation and then you have these attacks running, this distributed denial of service here and the virus red code there, and you have all this shit being in the press, and then you tell the politicians, and now please sign this, and then the problems are solved, and the politicians don't know what they're doing, they sign it. And this means in this specific field, and that's the information sphere on this planet, on the internet, it might mean that the national governments of Europe give their sovereignty away to the United States, having their echelon system as a tool, they're promoting it that way, to secure the internet.
And one gets the impression that the Council of Europe have tried very hard to push this through without adequate consultation, without talking to non-governmental organizations. Mm-hmm. And next month, they're hoping that all 43 members of the Council of Europe will sign it, and then there is no way out. Each individual country must then ratify this treaty, even though it hasn't been translated into their language, and they haven't had any chance democratically to examine it and what it could mean for their legal system.
We get a time signal, but the national implementation has a lot of freedom to do it or not do it, because the cybercrime treaty has so many progress where so many people discussed, even those few who were participating in the process, that this is complete against their existing legal law, that some of the chapters of the cybercrime treaty are to be implemented or not. But of course it might mean that there exists then pressure, if something happens, to implement it in full version, if just the next distributed denial of service attacks runs and then people say, hey, that and that country, avoid that, we find out or we solve the problem because they haven't implemented it, and then there will be a lot of pressure on that country. So I guess there is space for acting now, also watching the national discussions and educating and teaching politics on how things really work. And I think that's where the strong feature of the hacker scene comes to play, that we do not only know how to handle technology, but we are freely and openly talking and spreading information about it. Mm-hmm. And that our argumentation is not based on secret, it's based on know-how and on the ability to explain things. And I think that's very much asked now in lots of European countries, to the politicians to not become here in an overwhelming state just because they didn't understand the problem.
Okay, if people want to have more information about this treaty, what is really written down, which URL do they look for?
I think at www.gilk.org you'll find a quite excellent analysis, and I hope also a link to the original
How
document.
How do you spell it?
GILK, that's the Global Internet Liberty Campaign, GILC.org.
Okay, we're going to watch it.
Without an GILC, just
okay.
No H. Right.
GILC.
Right.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay.
Well,
it's okay.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
And now I know much more. And I'm going to continue with Tim. So thank you very much for being here and spending your time with us. You're listening to Space Station. But first, we're going to go to some music so everybody can make a little dance because it's sunny. And let's have a little holiday now. Come on.
Children, a place barely even made of words, a place made of interpretations, of fluttering immateriality, and expect them to live in it. Where before in history has there been a people from whom no fact is true?
Confident.
We didn't want this war. We didn't go looking for a
They fight. Said that it wouldn't work.
We exhausted every possible option.
Live radio, Space Station 5, and this is the live radio tent table outside the ASCII tent. First, there's someone who had an announcement about, I think, hardware for kids.
Yeah, this is Cece from the Gender Changers. I've been talked into giving a hardware course to a group of screaming four-year-olds. And we need a 386 or 486 to practice on. If anybody wants to donate that, that would be really great. Just the box is fine with some cards that we can pull in and out. It needs, it might get destroyed, so. So, if you could drop that by the ASCII tent, that would be really great if you have something that you could donate to that. Otherwise, we're just going to have some hardware smashing, and we already have some hardware for them to smash. So. Okay, thanks a lot.
It's very handy if you want to keep the 3 and 4 year year olds out of your way. So donate a computer to the ASCII tent so the kids can get hardware minded very quickly. I didn't have that in my days. Well, Tim, you're still here, and it's very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
You have sort of an Echelon game. I can remember that when Echelon sort of started, you just wrote in your email, like, terrorist or bomb or Clinton sucks or anything, but that doesn't work. On Echelon, that is.
Yeah, let me just first explain to your audience what Echelon is.
That's a good start.
Yeah. It's you could call it the ultimate Big Brother surveillance technology, as technology has increased in scope. It's become possible now to monitor almost 100% of all communications or telephone calls or faxes or telexes, all internet communication, unless people really have a very sophisticated cryptography security system or something of that kind. And this Big Brother system, this surveillance technology, is mostly run by the United States, but the four other countries involved, Britain, Canada, New Zealand and Australia, but they're junior partners to the United States, who are the only people who have access to all the so-called intelligence information that they gather. And the principle that it works on is that it looks for particular words, like you mentioned, like terrorist or
anarchist
or something like that, or
explosives.
Earth Liberation Front. Their favorite one was PGP for a while. That's
an encryptment.
Encryptment software. But fortunately, at the end of May, a list was published for the first time, which gave us a much better idea of what was in the so-called dictionary in this worldwide surveillance system.
Can you give me some examples of those words?
Yeah, it could be anything from... There are things like Bugs Bunny, which first thing that's absurd, but it's a code, it's a Secret Service code. Or they have one, there's one here, which is the name of an IRA double agent who's also working for the British government. And his name, for instance, is Steak Knife. So when you see Steak Knife, it's something to do with restaurants. It's actually, they want to see, for instance, whether people are talking about him, whether they found out there is somebody. So there is a serious background to it. But a lot of innocent people could get dragged into it. And part of the problem is that it leads to criminalization, so that more and more things become crimes instead of less and less things.
Yeah, so you type in Steak Knife, and then somebody sees that, well, H1 sees that, and then you're in a big file like possible criminal whatever.
That's right. And then
even when you're 12-year-old and you're just talking about a new gift you got for your birthday or something.
And there are cases like that. Let's say 5 years ago you were standing near a demonstration and you were photographed and they identified you, and then they put two and two together. I hear somebody was on a demonstration and now he said Steak Knife. Mm-hmm. So then you go into a suspect list, into a higher level, and you can't get out of there. Even if you ever, it's very Kafkaan, you never even find out that you're there, but perhaps you don't get a job because they do a security run on your name and they say, oh, well, we've got two hits on this guy. Maybe then they find out something else, a third point, another absurd point.
Yeah.
Now, there is going to be a global Jam Echelon Day where on October the 21st this year, and it's quite a sophisticated operation. If you want to find out more about it, go to the website HTTP and then CypherWar as one word, CypherWar.com, CypherWar.com. But they're using a very crude system, and the problem with that is if you just put at the end of your letter something like terrorist methamphetamine, kill the president, Albright, then even the machine will recognize that it's just a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the people who work there will in less than a second will see, well, this is somebody who's playing a game. So that really doesn't work. And the people who are organizing this day agree that it's basically to raise awareness about Echelon. They're not able to jam the system. But what I'd like to do is to start a different kind of game.
A more organized or non-organized, but...
Well, this game would be decentralized, and here I need to rely on people's creativity. It's something like writing a novel or writing a short story. So I ought to warn you, first of all, that if you start keying in these words, that like the ones I just mentioned, from your home computer, you will very probably get an attack by NSA. NSA will try and find out like who put these words in. That's done by the machine. That'll happen about half an hour after you type that in, before the human beings see that this was just a hoax. So I would advise you not to do it from your home computer, but to go to an internet cafe or somewhere else like that where you can be anonymous. So I think you need two people to play this game, unless you can imagine, unless you're a multi-personality and can imagine different personalities inside yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you start with a report of a political meeting, and this report has to look something like a real report. So I'm stimulating your creativity and asking you to write this story. And then you get a reply. Okay, how do we take it from there. And this will make it very difficult for the machine certainly won't spot the hoax, and it will make it very hard for the people to see whether there's something going on. So my idea is that you build up over time a whole history, a story,
mm-hmm.
an imaginary story about something. It need not involve violence. When you see the list of words, you can make up your own story. And if a lot of people did that, I think it could become, that if anything, could become very confusing for the people who run Echelon and this Big Brother surveillance technology.
Oh my God. It's very hard also to leave your own computer to do something like that. If you already want to do something like that, why should people do something like jamming Echelon? Isn't it a good thing that some big thing is watching over us because we're poor souls and we don't know where we're going?
Yeah, well, this depends on your philosophy. If you believe that people need to be told how to live their lives, then you need Echelon. But as Andy was saying before, the general trend is that more and more power goes to the government, and what used to be, or what at the moment is, let's say, a tool for decentralized people's technology, whereby anybody can set up their own newspaper in the net or their own forum of communication in 5 minutes. You can set up a website very quickly, and anybody in the world, more or less, maybe not in China, but in most of the world, can see it. And I think the governments of this world find that to be a threat. And so they're changing the rules. What used to be a rule-free, let's say, anarchist-type setup, which was amazingly creative. I mean, the internet technology has been the fastest technological revolution that there's ever been in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And now the government are trying to control it. They're trying to make sure that they can trace and track every single person who gets access to the internet and make sure that these people, that you and me, don't do anything that conflicts with their idea of how we should live our lives.
Yeah, but Andy already told earlier that governments don't even know how internet or hackers or anything works. Most of the time they have to decide about something they don't even do themselves. So how can they make a good decision for us?
Well, they can't. That's the point. And out of this ignorance comes the kind of legislation that he was talking about, which is badly thought out, where they have pet companies who are trying to sell their own products and then say, yeah, we've consulted industry because we had two companies here, or they have one NGO and then say, yeah, we've consulted the NGOs, and they don't give people the chance to take a position.
Yes.
Against it. And then, as I say, it becomes mandatory for 43, or semi-mandatory for 43 countries. And this is a trend that we see, I think, particularly with the Bush government, that they are, in comparison, okay, Clinton, well, whatever you think of him, but he certainly, I think, had a little more respect for individual countries, whereas the new government apparently really don't care, for instance, with their unilateral withdrawal from many international treaties. That shows that they lack respect for other countries, and one
mm-hmm.
sees this
yeah.
in this kind of legislation, where basically they want to say American law runs writ throughout the whole world.
Yes, like an adolescent boy wants to dominate everything in his neighborhood to get all the girls or something. I don't know what Bush motivation is to do this. But anyway, I think we can play a little music and then talk a little bit more about the game, or get more information about it, like what the words are, because we all want to know that. Of course. We'll be right back. You're listening to Space Station 5 live.
My heart beats electrically. My brain computes. Program me. I am complicated. Let me be. I am new. Program me. This trip
reality is mine if you let me be. I am love and I am free. I am a child. Program me.
Sam is up there. Or we're just listening to some more music.
The bad, the evil, the bad, the evil.
Yeah, if it wasn't for your whip, I'd have nothing to strip.
If it wasn't for a wrist, I'd have nothing to slip. If it wasn't for the spoon, I'd have nothing to chew. I'm just fucking with you, cause I got nothing to do. I came in the pilot with skateboarders, place orders, eat hors d'oeuvres. Here's the way that we play warmer. Let you inhale the rocks now. When I'm ripping your wallet off, flipping the Molotov in your cocktail, burning your contracts, puncturing it over the face, masks, glasses, and turning them to contacts. More from show shit, if it's missing, I took it. What? Nurse, look at this straitjacket, it's crooked. I go to jail and murder you from a cell. Put a knife in an envelope and have you stabbed in the mail. So how do you describe someone with a decapitated head when the rest of his body's still alive?
Running, coming with five gunmen, waiting to do a drive-by. So when you see the black 500, hide from it. For every 100 MCs rhyming about birds, only about 2/3 will really said it without words. Yo, you ain't a thug, I can make you pitch up. Pick the fifth up, cock spit, you would swear it was raining slugs. I'm the hottest shit in the industry. I got every thug on the block to get a wind of me, defending me. You lack class and respect, get a direct black blast. The bad and evil man rap, I cover the bad half. You know how I thug and this shit will end up. Spit around, lift your chin up. You get hit, sit down and chin up. Take it if you run your mouth, then you wanna get sent up. Eat it up, you be leaking blood and spitting phlegm up. Now we rivals, cause of a small name and title. You step, got devoured and left with a flower and bite. Yo, if it wasn't for your wrist, I'd have nothing to strip.
And if it wasn't for a wrist, I'd have nothing to slip. If it wasn't for the spoons, I'd have nothing to chew. I'm just fucking with you, cause I got nothing to do.
If it wasn't for your whip, I'd have nothing to strip.
And if it wasn't for a wrist, I'd have nothing to slip. If it wasn't for the spoons, I'd have nothing to chew. I'm just fucking with you, cause I got nothing to do. Forget a chorus, my metaphors are so complicated, it takes 6 minutes to get applause. And by the time you all catch on, I'ma end your career and walk away with the whole floor, so you have nothing to fall back on. Blow you off of 10 floors, pull a fucking headache out of my head, put it in yours. I'm indoors, waiting for this acid to seep in my skin pores, to go outdoors and do some in-stores. This bitch wanted to blow me, I said it ought to happen. Swallow cum, bitch.
So, we're back, I think. I hope my monitor is doing the same thing. Yes, it does. How good. Yeah, I've got a little tuner thingy here, and it starts sort of moving from frequencies and stuff. That's very exciting. But we're talking here outside of the ASCII tent on Space Station 5 live with Tim. And Tim told us already about the 21st of October for Echelon Jam Day. And he has a very long list to our keywords which trigger Echelon. So if you want to be on there, not from your home computer, but from a cyber cafe or somebody you don't like, it's computer. You can type in a lot of words. Well, Tim, I see on, if I can see from here, that even the word sex is something they trigger. My God, I should I should change my language now. Which words can't I use or should I use if I want to enter the Echelon jamming thing?
Well, as I say, they have very sophisticated technology. A machine that can recognize what kind of letters are likely to contain something that needs to be looked at in more detail. And the machine, after it's tried to find out who you are, then passes all these possibly suspicious letters on to human beings, who then look through them very fast and then pick out ones that they think
could be something.
And a little question: who are those human beings? Because, for instance, a lot of cameras who are hanging in the streets are most of the time low-paid people with low education who should watch our safety. And I don't know how they can do that, because I think you should have like a sort of education to do that. But that's another discussion. So, who are those people who are looking those HLN files?
These are people in five different countries that I mentioned before: the United States, and then their junior partners in the Commonwealth countries, Britain, Australia, Canada, and
New Zealand. But are they secret service?
You could call them secret service or intelligence operatives or something of that kind.
Mm-hmm.
And they each get assigned, say, a particular country like Nigeria or Korea Turkmenistan that they're interested in, and then they get given a group of words that they get their orders. So we're interested, say, in whether there's nuclear waste is being taken to a particular country,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe there's a ship that it's on. So they want to see any emails that refer to nuclear waste and a ship and this country, and then they take it from there. And one of the perhaps I could point out, if you're thinking, well, that's I'm very happy that those people are there and are making sure that there are no nuclear terrorists, but one of the treacherous things about, let's call them secret police or intelligence services, is that they're never properly supervised. They're not under democratic control. And so whatever you think about the police, they are just at least a little bit more under democratic control and don't operate in the same conditions of secrecy that,
mm-hmm.
of course, are part and parcel of the work of the kind of forces that run Echelon.
Yes. So, let's go to the list.
Yeah, there are, as I say, even the simple words could have another meaning. I don't know why 69 is there. Perhaps that was just
69.
69, yeah.
It was a good year of wine, I think.
That's right.
Maybe for wine smugglers.
Yeah, I ought to point out, by the way, that they monitor lots of different languages. And this list that I'm almost sure comes from GCHQ in Cheltenham.
So it's an English list?
It's an English list, because there was a group of agents working at Cheltenham in 91 and 92 who blew the whistle on this whole thing. And that was the first time that anybody got to hear of it.
Mm-hmm.
And not a peep has been heard from any of the other four countries. So I assume that this is filtered out from them one way or another. I take it with a pinch of salt. It's out of date. Some of the words, I think, have been added in as counter-uncovering moves to cover them, because they obviously don't want to be identified as being the person that led to the leak.
Mm-hmm.
And there wouldn't be, for instance, let's say they were interested in a particular house in a particular street at that time because there was some operation going on there, that address certainly wouldn't be in here. So it's more like long-term things, say, to do with Iraq, to do with Russia or China or Kosovo.
Yeah, I see, for instance, 15 kg. That means 15 kilos.
15
kilograms.
Kilos, that's right. But I think this is probably a reference to a particular code. It's always the danger. It's a, like, double think. Does it mean 15 kilograms, or does it mean Bill Clinton or somebody else? It could do.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just don't know. It's like a world for itself. And by the way, there is a law in Britain that once somebody enters these intelligence services, for the rest of their life until they die, it is a crime for them to reveal anything at all, anything absolutely, like even what colour the teacups were. That could be a crime. They could be prosecuted on the day before they die when they're 80 years old. So I think it's very brave that presumably these people in Cheltenham went public on this. And I have to say, I find this liberating. It's what William Burroughs called a breakthrough in the grey room, where you actually see what's going on in these machines that otherwise you'd never get a glimpse of throughout the rest of your life. Are they watching you? You just don't know. It's a very
well, if they scan everything,
yeah.
Your chat, your email, you get the most strangest email, and sometimes you even reply on the stupid email that says most of the words may be in there. So everybody could be in there. So it's very hard to stay out of it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's like if you make a decision to be a socially conscious citizen,
mm-hmm.
then where does your conscience take you?
Yeah, well, that's hard, I think. Okay, but back to the 21st of October, Echelon Jam Day. How are you going to do it? Or people who are listening, do it with two people, at least, or with a group? And...
Yeah, as I say, I wouldn't. My advice would be don't sit down at home and do it. Go somewhere else. Somebody pointed out that probably a lot of, let's say, terrorists will choose this particular day to communicate with each other because there'll be so many spam mails, there'll be so much rubbish that what they say will somehow slip through. But I don't think so because, for instance, let's take the word marijuana. That's a theme in the Netherlands. Very few people who smoke say marijuana. They say grass or shit or
weed
or whatever.
Or say the thing by the name because a lot of sorts, I mean.
And nobody is going to say, for instance, hey man, there's 100 kilos of marijuana arriving tonight. They're going to say the package is arriving or something like that, or 7 o'clock and nothing more. So what it suggests to me is they want to monitor particularly journalists and drug specialists working in the field and find out what they're saying. And I think it's really journalists who are at the sharp end
mm-hmm.
of all this because
yes.
it's the journalists who are the biggest threat to what Stephen Dorrell called the permanent state. That's the state behind the state that you don't see, the state that doesn't get covered in the budget, where billions disappear into. That's the permanent state that you don't elect.
So journalists are in there as well, in their system.
I'm sure they are, yeah. And if you look at the organizations that talk about how many journalists are killed every year, the figures are really shocking. I mean, it's in countries like Turkey and the Balkans and other places, the forces that be and sometimes also guerrilla organizations have absolutely no scruples at all about killing journalists, about
mm-hmm.
murdering them, maybe torturing them. And of course then the others see what happened to their colleagues and
hush up a little. But we've seen in Genoa, for instance, that with a demonstration which has all kinds of reasons why it went out of hand. Also, journalists were beaten and hospitalized, so they're in great danger. Okay, well, I still don't know how we're going to organize the Echelon Jam Day. I think the people who don't want to be on there should not email or chat or use the internet on the 21st of October. Don't phone. Stay at home in bed. Do something else for a change.
Well, it is only symbolic. The people who are organizing it have a proverb from Madagascar which states, cross the river in a crowd and the crocodile won't eat you. So safety in numbers, and that's the best day to protest. But if you want to play this game that I suggested, I would like to ask somebody to offer a framework in which I could organize prizes for this, having recently inherited a little sum of money, where for the most convincing hoax, that's all we're talking about, is something like a student hoax,
mm-hmm.
which really does look convincing. It could be a prize of, say, 500 guilders. So that would be a small financial reward and a smaller second prize.
How are you going to do that? Because,
I don't know. I have to find a framework. I think I can find some judges. It would probably be in the English language. And then I think we could make a book out of this, and it would be itself an item. But I also ought to point out to the novel by Umberto Eco, The Pendulum of Foucault, where somebody tried something very similar, where they invented a secret Masonic order, and then the black magicians believed that there really was a secret order, and they murdered the people, or they interrogated them and tried to get out of them what it was they knew. So being tortured for knowledge that you don't have is worse than being tortured for knowledge that you do have. And if you make up a very, very complicated story and then get arrested for it, you have to accept the consequences, but perhaps you can prove that it really was just a story and it was really just part of a competition, silly competition that was organized.
So how do the people, the judges, know that you entered the game, and how...
It would work on the system that everybody sends in their entries. They would collect all their entries, the dialogues, and then say put in a nickname like Devil or Fred, and then the judges would select the winners and then announce to Fred and to Fred's address or to a phone number, Fred, you've won. And Fred turns out to be a woman, or two women.
Or a whole group of women.
Yeah.
That's fun. Okay. Is there any website or URL about this?
Not yet, no. Because I haven't yet got a framework to administer this. And perhaps if somebody who's listening to this can get in touch with you and say, yeah, I have an association or something that could administer this money, so it would be out of my hands.
Yeah, I point them right through to you, because I don't think I'd be able to do that. I'm a journalist in a way, so I'm very dangerous, I think. And you also said the URL cypherwar.com.
Yeah, that's the people who've set up a very sophisticated network with a lot of mirror sites.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that there's quite a lot going on there. Their website does look very professional, and they're the people who've been responsible for distributing these lists of words. So I assume that they've got the contacts with the people who are releasing them.
Okay, we will have to tune everything for the 21st of October, the Echelon Gem Day, and yeah, visit cypherwar.com. Mm. Tim, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Yes. I'm wondering. Well, we are back live from the ASCII tent. You can join us here in a sunny field. And at the table, I have some new person. I don't even know your name.
Hi, I'm Hugh Daniel. I'm the manager of the Linux Free Swan Project, which is a project to try to make the net a place where privacy is as important as publicity.
Mm-hmm. I see a linkage with the Echelon thing. Echelon thing.
Well, the Echelon thing is, at least from an American's point of view, a major, major crime against privacy and against the natural rights of humankind. Echelon and systems like it, which are deployed in many places, are based on the belief that the society, that specifically the government, knows more than the individuals mm-hmm. about how they should live and what they should do and who they should talk to. This is really very much against what was at least the American Revolution, which said that individuals run their own lives so long as they're not hurting others. Now, the government uses the excuse of every now and then some fool hurts someone mm-hmm. to go off and spy on everyone. But you never really see that there's no court cases anyone can point to and say Echelon prevented this guy from killing this other guy over here. The government always says, well, if you knew what I knew, which, yeah, it's like the sort of trouble you saw on the playground. You know, when we were in school, the bullies said that, and, you know, the people who had all the secret bad stuff on, you know, the girl over there, which wasn't any of it true for some reason.
But a bully is right. Because he's stronger, or...
The bully's only right as far as his fist goes. And in the information age, fists are different. They're no longer physical things particularly.
Mm-hmm.
They are quality software. And we have the chance to build and deploy and use more quality software than the fuddy-duddies inside many of the government spook agencies
yes.
can ever imagine.
So, and that's why Linux is for, right?
Well, Linux is one example of this. There's the Linuxes, there's the 3BSDs, there's all possible systems.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things that I just finished speaking about for over 2 hours was the tragedy of software quality. I like that. Her cigarette won't start up.
No, it doesn't work, but I already get a light. Wow.
Good. She can go ahead and commit suicide in public on the radio.
Watch me. On the radio.
Well, remember I said you were cute?
Thank you.
Yeah,
do that on the air. Everybody will get here.
You don't look nearly as cute with a cigarette in your hand.
Oh, my God. Well, that's better. Okay.
Ah, and the great anarchist over there has been affected by all the movies rather than making his own decisions as to what's sexy.
No. He's smoking and drinking coffee. That will do the thing. Okay.
So, you've got a question, or shall I just
read it? I don't know what it means.
Well, why don't you read it?
Five minutes voor het einde, even zwaaien. Okay, if I can wave 5 minutes before the end. But I think we have another guest after this person.
Hugh.
Okay.
He's the next one. So why don't we get back to what the Linux Free Swan Project is about?
Yes,
because that's quite important to the work I've been doing. And I've literally been doing it longer than I did high school,
mm-hmm.
which before this project was the thing I'd done longest in my life besides breathe. The idea behind the Linux Free Swan Project is to fix an error that the community made in designing the Internet. The Internet technology that is the base technology today is called IP, Internet mm-hmm. Protocol.
Yeah.
And it does a lot of things that were considered impossible back in the 70s, including completely confuse and scare large corporations and their billing departments. What it didn't do was assure two things, accuracy and privacy. Right now, because of the way the technology works, if you went to look up on a government website what laws you have to obey in doing a radio program, and you know maybe there's a few laws that would matter there. You know, in most societies there's way too many. But if you went to look these laws up, I could change what you're reading. And neither you nor the government would know. And at least in the U.S., you would then be liable for the changes I made in the laws you read.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's
scary,
problem number one. That's true. The other problem is that I have the skills to look over the shoulders of almost anyone at this camp, even the best hackers, and read what they're reading. I can see the love letters they send. I can figure out which is their favorite porno sites. I can figure out which anarchist documents they're reading and which bits of legal treatise they're reading. And if I were their opponent in something, knowing what they're doing, knowing what they're reading, knowing what they're learning is a key to knowing what they're thinking. These two things need fixing. And it turns out they get fixed together. There's this wonderful branch of mathematics called cryptography.
Mm-hmm.
It's the art and science of communicating useful information between two parties where third parties in the middle don't understand what's going on. It turns out it is also the art and science of being able to assure certain things, to claim certain things like the accuracy of information or to be certain that the information didn't come from you. So there's all this wonderful stuff, and there's a small group of people in the IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force, which is the anarchy, interestingly enough,
mm-hmm.
that does the technology behind the Internet. This group, could you please get the cigarette away from me? Well, you're more than welcome to commit slowicide. I don't need to breathe that. I've already breathed
enough
for my parents.
And the wind is coming my way, so I think somebody behind you is smoking terribly.
No, it was your cigarette.
Okay, I'll
kill
it now.
It was too close. No, just put it on the other side of you, okay?
It's okay.
That way you can breathe.
It's better not to smoke. You're right.
Well,
but anyway.
I want you to be free, but I need to be free of you being free.
Of course. You're right. Okay, the task force.
So, the task force has designed an improvement to the IP technology that we call IPsec, which is very short for IP secure or IP security.
Mm-hmm.
And it solves these two fundamental problems. Now, the problem with the technology is that it's very hard to manage. And as it's currently set up, it's something that's only useful to very skilled system administrators or organizations like governments and corporations large enough to set this stuff up. Well, that's nice, but that's not good enough for some of us.
So
what we're working on is something we call opportunistic encryption. The idea here is that you use some simple information to find out if any two systems on the Internet have the opportunity to talk securely between each other. And if they do, they start that up. The cool thing about this is that right now, even for the people who can afford to set up crypto links and privacy links on the net, they have to do it twice for every connection. So if you've got a machine and I've got a machine, we both have to set up each end to talk to each other. And then if you want to talk to him, you've got to reset up your end, and he's got to set up his end. This is called N squared. It's very boring. It's a lot of work, and you usually mistype things, get frustrated, and scream at the poorly designed computers. What we're interested in doing, and we've actually succeeded in doing, we've got the first version of this out, is setting up each machine once and setting it up so that other machines that are similarly capable can notice that you're set up, like I'm set up, and automatically, when they have the opportunity, thus opportunistic encryption, get that encryption up and running between two sites. And the advantage of this is that it's a no-hassle thing. The computer can do this all of a sudden. If someone wants to read over their shoulder, at least in the US S of A, they have to knock on the door with a warrant signed by a judge of one of the two parties. They can no longer go to your neighbor, climb up your telephone pole, force your phone company to listen into you, etc.
Yeah.
We've got this technology up and running. It's been out for about 2 months, the first version of it. It's actually, we're up to version 1.91. We had to get all the other boring, you know, good corporate stuff working first, and then we could expand it into opportunistic encryption. There's a whole bunch of more work that needs to be done on this in getting people to deploy it, getting it turned into a standard. But our vision is that someday every device that runs IP on the planet will have IPsec built into it, so that when your cell phone calls my cell phone, your property, the cell phone, and my property, the cell phone, will encrypt end-to-end automatically to each other without us having to do anything, and our conversation will be private and not used against us in a kangaroo court of our Lord's law.
Okay, two questions. Where can we find more information about this, and how can we get it? What should we do?
Well, you can find more information out by going to www.freeswan.org. FreeSwan. To explain the name, it stands for Secure Wide Area Network. And we added the word free to it because I'm very lucky to have been asked by some philanthropists around the world to lead the team of people that's doing the software. And we're writing it and giving it away freely to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an impressive list of users. If I were just doing a clientele list, I could make a lot of money off of this because I have users from Greenpeace to the NSA to the U.S. Federal Reserve.
So that's a lot.
That's it. Well, I don't know if it's a lot of people, but it's certainly a broad range. I mean, when are you going to find the FBI, the FBI, the Navy, Greenpeace, and human rights organizations agreeing on anything?
Never.
They're agreeing on what software to use, and we consider this a good thing.
But the good thing could be seen by the government and all the big control freaks that it's something not so good. Because now they have to knock on the door and come with a warrant. So don't you have any problems with that or getting any problems with that, doing that?
That was the basis that we created a legal society on in the U.S. Warrants were written into the Constitution. They had limits. The government's supposed to have good, solid information ahead of time before they knock on your door. Mm-hmm. And no one who was involved in at least creating the U.S. back in the 1780s and 1770s imagined a no-knock warrant. A no-knock warrant is a fiction that has been created since then. I will also say another thing that's a little bit dangerous. A lot of the crime that the current system of spying and you know having to poke into your records and stuff like that, those are crimes created by the government when the government created mafias. Mafias weren't effective, weren't an interesting thing in the U.S. So the government, till the government started telling you what drugs you could do back in the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't need an FBI. You didn't need to tap people's phones. This wasn't necessary before our government started becoming fascist.
Wow.
So, you know, in some sense, I'm being very political here. We're going to make the tools. We're going to build the tools that ensure our freedom and our power as individuals over our government with mathematics. It's a lot nicer than doing it with guns.
I love the idea very much, and I've got a lot of respect for this initiative, because I think it's the most basic right you have. I don't want them to read my letters or my essays or anything.
Well, so they might be able to get a warrant to read your letters and essays.
I have to buy the book.
Well, that'll be an interesting book to read.
Yeah, sure do. I think it's going to be X-rated anyway in the United States, so it's going to be illegal.
That's okay. I'll come read it in the free world.
Oh, you can come visit me for a cup of tea and herbal tea, of course. One question for my colleague. Well, one.
Hello. This is about the second keys, as they have been around cryptography in the U.S. in the last couple of years anyway. When I downloaded my first version of Secure Shell, I found out that there is a U.S. version and that there is an international version. And researching a little bit what the U.S. version was about, I found out that every cryptographic software, I mean, this might be an error that I read somewhere, but has to give a second key to all kind of national security spies that exists in the U.S. So even if we implement something like opportunistic encryption and IPsec, won't they have a giant key ring with the second key anyway?
If your software comes from inside the USS of A, or your software comes from a corporation, and corporations tend to be highly influenced by governments, you're right. You do need to doubt the software. But our team's software is written by individuals in the free world outside of the USS of A. No USS of A citizen slave unit such as myself is allowed to have anything to do with the programming or coding or design of the system. Our code is also open, free, public source. Anyone in the world can review it. Many people use it. You notice both Greenpeace and the U.S. Navy trust it. which is a bit frightening that they both trust it, but they both can look at it. This is one of the clear advantages that free and open source has, especially in the security area, over all other forms. If you look at the history of crypto and privacy communications, you'll find that even companies that are hundreds of years old in Switzerland have been corrupted by the U.S. government to sell shitty crypto elsewhere in the world. We've worked very hard to make very certain that while we might not offer a lot of options of crypto, that we offer a few well-known, solid crypto algorithms that work.
Okay, then.
How come that I never heard about it? I'm a computer user.
You weren't listening?
Well, I never heard about it.
Were you at HIP? Were you at CCC?
I was at HIP, yes.
Oh, so was I, and I was saying exactly the same thing then.
I was doing probably a radio program about other things.
And I was even more annoying back then. I was hiring.
But anyway, how do people know this thing?
Well, 4 years ago, we knew what we wanted, but we didn't have the program working,
mm-hmm, right?
Right. And I explained essentially what I just explained.
Yeah.
Today, I can say, go download version 1.91 or future versions of FreeSwan, and it has the actual opportunistic system in there. It is up and running. It works. I demoed it just a few hours ago here at HAL 2001, and there were a couple of people in the audience fast enough to notice the difference in speed between our stuff and the normal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's very slight. There's a little bit of difference there, but it's very slight. It's up and running. It's still experimental. It's not the sort of thing that I might recommend for you, but you've got a sysadmin in your life.
I have to commit something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use Linux.
Yeah, so?
So? And it's still usable.
Well, it turns out there's two ways you can run this. Mm-hmm. All right. Go ahead. That's a fine question. The reason you don't use Unix is probably the reason for my last talk on software quality or the lack thereof it. But in the meantime, to answer your question directly, there's two ways you can run this software. You can put it directly on a Linux host and have it talk in what we call host-to-host mode. And that's the way we want to see things used in the long term, because that means that I own the device doing my privacy. Where right now, for instance, if you've got a telephone like this nice GSM phone that's not in my pocket at my feet now, GSM phone is really, in some sense, even though you paid for it, it's the property of the government and the corporados. And I am certain that any government it wants can suck out every phone number out of my GSM. You want a real nightmare scenario? Imagine a phone with Bluetooth in it that can talk to any other Bluetooth device within 10 meters. Imagine that the phone companies are forced by the government security assholes to secretly turn on your Bluetooth and have it tell the phone company who whatever Bluetooth devices are within 10 meters of you. Talk about friends and family.
One big family here, happy.
Are we?
I don't know. Are we happy or what? We have now, at least, I think about 50 people joining us here. To be on TV, actually. Well, we are. There's the ASCII cam on the tent, so if we all can wave back home to the people who could not be here. Well, the camera doesn't come here. That's because we're making radio anyway. So
let me finish answering your question.
Yes, do that.
The other mode you can run the software in is what we call security gateway mode. And this is kind of fun. It's a really cool near-term hack. You can take an old PC, something you've thrown out, and you can set it between your home network, your school network, your business network, and the outside world, the wild internet. And it goes where your router goes, next to your router, on the other side of your router. In my world, I just make my router and my security gateway one and the same machine. In my firewall, it's all just Linux or something, right? And you tell the world that for every machine on your net, that their security machine is this security gateway. And then this old cheap doorstop PC can do security for your entire subnet, and you don't have to upgrade Windows. There isn't a Windows, really, with opportunistic encryption in it. You don't have to worry about Mac OS. You don't have to worry about your old Apple II that you put an Ethernet
Amiga
into. Exactly, Amiga. All those machines can be protected by the security gateway. Now, it's important that you control your security gateway and that you make certain no one else, no script kiddies, control it as well. Because script kiddies, I bet you that the FBI and the various national agencies going to be hiring a lot of script kiddies because they're going to be desperate to break into machines. But in any case, the idea here is that you can get a cheap machine. You can buy a new one. I mean, machines are $500 these days. And while it seems like a lot of money, in the grand scheme of things, it's not anymore.
You don't need a big one to do it.
You don't need a big one. I can give you a number, and that is a 150 megahertz 586 will encrypt more than a T1 line in both directions. It won't quite encrypt an E1 line, which is a standard phone here in Europe, big phone pipe. But it'll certainly encrypt more than enough. A 66 megahertz 586 can just not quite barely handle both barrels of a ISDN line, so 128K. Per second. So considering that most phone lines are, most connections to the internet are less than that, the hardware is more than capable of providing secure communication.
And to the other one, using SSH to read your mail over some kind of a local client, is this correct? Or Telnet or whatever.
I have no idea what you just asked.
Well, you said 81 lines in both directions. This is about to fill a console. Is this correct?
81, huh? Okay, let me try this again, okay? T1. Okay.
T1, yeah.
T1. Most lines, most of the network infrastructure, right, is either home phone lines or home ISDN lines or home DSL lines, or it's big backbone equipment. Okay, we don't care about the big backbone equipment, all right? Because securing that doesn't do anything, because the government just comes in and twists the corporado's arm, and that's the end of privacy. Okay, privacy is something you build and you enforce for yourself forever, worldwide. All right, so you have to own your equipment. Well, very few people here have a T1 line. All right, my partner and I both have T1 lines. All right, they're very expensive. Right, they are 24 times as fast as a modem, about a megabit per second. All right, even something as fast as that, an old 150 megahertz 586, is good enough to fully encrypt all the traffic going in and out of that at once. All
right. Right. So in other words, so if I connect to a web server, just hypothetical case, using an IPsec tunnel built up through opportunistic. Encryption over my modem, I will still see my porn as fast as if I would not, if I use such a security gateway at home.
Actually, about 2.5 milliseconds slower.
Okay, then.
So, would you still enjoy your porn then?
Well, hey, I've got news for you. Slower is really often better.
Yeah, take it easy. Well, let's finish it off with this one. I think that's a nice end of the line. FreeSwan.org.
FreeSwan.org. And you know, the last thing I can say is that people like I and my team of people can build these tools. We can stand up and collect all the arrows shot at us by opponents and governments, but it won't matter a damn unless people like you folks out there standing around here, the people I'm looking at right now, and the people listening, and even you spooks once you wake up, learn to use the software and deploy it. That's the best thing you can do for your own privacy, for your own society as people.
Thank you very much, you. One question, I think.
There is one more question.
There's always one more question.
I just learned. You are, as far as I understand, the manager of FreeSwan.
That's true.
Right. So you're their employee, to say it like that.
Excuse me?
I just hear from my colleague here that you can actually not talk about certain things unless in public. Can you explain that? And
all right. This will be full of great radio bites.
Okay, put the sample machine on.
Get ready to repeat this again and again. I would have liked to have written this code myself. I'd like writing code. It's fun. Okay, managing people is frightening, especially when they're your friends and you have to tear their ears off. And kick their asses. That's damn right. And you do it because it's good for them, but it's like, ow, you know, it really puts the meat behind me, you know, when you spank a kid. This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you.
Exactly. I know that line before.
From which end? No, I won't ask.
Well, we can talk about this later.
Oh, no. But we weren't talking about the San Francisco version. That's completely different. Let's get into this. The U.S. government has gone insane.
Yes.
It is completely insane.
Yes.
And just to annoy all of you standing around, it's your fault here in Europe.
What did we do? Why the United States is so bunkers?
It's very simple. We had to come and clean the mess up twice last century. No.
I think.
It's called world wars. It's called the U.S. came in here and told you people to stop fighting over little shit twice.
And we let them.
And you let them, and my government, and we succeeded.
My God.
But my government never recovered after the second time. Mm-hmm. After the First World War, we let you go your way. We let everyone have nice, good times. And it happened again 30 years later. And we had to go in. We had to finish up the battle. Luckily, we let you beat each other to a pulp first, so it wasn't that hard.
I thought the Canadians set the Dutch free. Blame Canada.
Hey! Remember, compared to us, Holland is only the size of a county, so all the soldiers in Canada were just barely enough to free it. But in all truthfulness, okay, mm-hmm. The U.S. government's gone insane. We could argue over the reasons. I've given you one possible reason, okay?
Yes.
The U.S. government has decided that it is an empire. Rules, nations, boundaries, humanity are no longer a limit to it. It's going to do whatever it wants until the few of us here who are Americans get control of our government again and remind the government that the government is our employee. It works for us as individuals. Government has no say in our society. Corporations have no say. It is we, the people, built a nation by and for the people, not by and for the corporations and the convenience of the government. Now,
remember that.
Yes, that's what the Second Amendment is the period for. Well, imagine if you just spent 14 years fighting the world's greatest power, would you give up your guns? So, now, let's go on to the specific question that was asked. I know, guns make you people frightened. Live with it. Why can't I speak certain things? We once had a law called the ITAR. International Trafficking in Arms Regulations. The law sunsetted and went away. This was very inconvenient for our lords in Washington, but it would have been even more inconvenient to pass a new law. So I believe it was then President George Bush I decrees. You know the way King George III and Stalin ruled? King George I passed a emergency declaration that said that cryptography and the art and science that we are desperately going to depend upon to make the net a sane and safe place for commerce, for communication, for love letters, is a munition. It is equivalent to a nuke bomb. It is equivalent to an ICBM missile. It is equivalent to a bayonet. And that the government could control all aspects of its distribution outside of the USS of A, i.e. from its borders and beyond, that were done by Americans or had something to do with Americans. These are very complex laws. They're not laws. They're declarations. They in no way ever deserve the respect of the word law. The laws are written, I said it myself, the declarations are written to be fuzzy. If you look at what happened to the banking system in the second half of the 1800s in the U.S., they figured out how you write regulations that scare people into not doing anything that the government doesn't want them to. Right? This is very wrong. It's very evil, but it's very successful in our country. There is no private money anymore. There's no private finance. It's all the government's money, just maybe on loan to you. Right? I call these sorts of rules and regulations, declarations and laws, fuzzy laws. All right? And the idea behind a fuzzy law is you can't do anything without asking permission.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So they wrote the emergency declarations replacing ITAR in the same way. such that anything you wanted to do with crypto has an American anywhere in the world. Mind you, these laws recognize no boundaries. Okay, you had to really ask permission. Of course, permission was always denied unless you were a big enough government contractor and you bent over and put in the back doors and all this crap. Okay, so we pushed them. All right, EFF pushed hard. We had a bunch of lawsuits. It was clear the government was losing. It was clear that if you brought these cockroaches into the light of day, that these regulations would have to fall even to the simplest of constitutional rights. So the government went and changed things. They moved the regulations. They redeclared the emergency, national security, keeps it from the voters because what's good for America is good for General Motors. This whole song that goes on like this. They moved this emergency from the State Department over to Commerce. And then they went to the courts and they said, oh, everything's better now because it's in Commerce. Therefore, this law case is null and void. And some of them got dropped and some of them went forward. And the ones that went forward caused them last year, three times in 1 year, to put nice new makeup on this law. Here's where I disagree, John Gilmore, the founder of the Free Swan Project, and I disagree with people like the OpenBSD Project. Last year they changed these declarations to make it look like you can distribute crypto from the U.S. You really have a pretend right to distribute crypto from the U.S. You have to inform the government ahead of time, and the government can, after the fact, decide that you didn't deserve to export the crypto. After the fact. There's another whole set of these regulations, these declarations, that are called the foreign assistance provisions. The foreign assistance provisions are essentially say as follows, that except in very narrow public academic realms, like when I'm giving a public speech, mm-hmm. like John Gilmore and I did earlier this afternoon, I do not have the freedom to say anything about crypto or crypto-shaped holes, if you can imagine what a crypto-shaped hole would look like. If I were to sit here and tell you, in private, and I think this might not qualify as private, but if we were to walk behind this tent to that side of the tent, and you know, just the five of us talking, you know, 20 feet away, that would be private. And if I said the cryptographic equivalent of E equals MC squared that was published 50 years ago, they claim that's a felony. Now, they've never actually persecuted or prosecuted anyone on these laws, but they hold these laws over people. They did this to Phil Zimmerman. They spent 2-3 years poking into every bit of his life, getting all of his employers to fire him, running up tens of thousands of dollars in legal bills because they had this pretend evil law. Our goal in the project is to make it the U.S. the laughingstock of the freer world, to make the U.S. look like the emperor with no clothes. And believe me, while being naked might not be a big deal in Europe, it's frightening in the U.S.
Yes. Okay, I want to wrap this up. We're going to play some music. I want to thank you very much for this very interesting interview. About, I think, one-fourth I understood, but I'm going to go to freeswan.org and get educated.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank
Have a good
too.
Time.
Okay, Space Station 5 live by the Esky Tent. We are sitting here out in the sun, and we still have one guest, and we're going to do that after this short musical break. Stay tuned.
All we want is a head rush. All we want is to get out of our skin for a while. We have nothing to lose because we don't have anything. Anything we want, anyway. We used to hate people. Now we just make fun of them. More effective that way. We don't live, we just scratch on day to day with nothing but math books and sarcasm in our pockets, and all we're waiting for is for something worth waiting for. Let's admit America gets the celebrities we deserve. Let's assume, don't quote me, because if no one quotes you, you probably haven't said a thing
famous and rich and happy, but you're terrified. You have nothing to offer this world, nothing to say and no way to say it, but you can say it in three languages. You are more than the sum of what you consume. Desire is not an occupation. You are ultimately thrilled and desperate. Sky high and fucked. Let's stop praying for someone to save us and start saving ourselves. Let's stop this and start over. Let's go out. Let's keep going. This is your life. This is your fucking life. We need something to cure the pain of all that nothing inside.
Kids, do you like cannabis?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Want to see me pack a fat bowl and then smoke out of it?
Uh-huh.
Want to copy me and be a serious pothead?
Yeah.
Say things like dank, skunk, Buddha roach, reefer nugget?
Oh, yeah.
My brain said, wait, I can't think another thought. This shit's all clogged up with tetrahydrocannabinol. And Johnny D says,
hey, Dave, I'm pretty hungry.
Well, then let's eat.
I don't feel like walking, man. Want to carry me?
Well, since age 4, I couldn't really feel my legs. Because I smoked a fat joint or two every night before I went to bed. Got real stoned and started listening to Crisscross.
Jump!
Felt really weird, kind of like I had some nip-ons.
Is it cold in here?
I smoke a fat pound of grass and enlarge my ass with some nachos and burritos. But I got a Taco Bell really fast.
Come here, baby, you look really good right now.
John? Wait a minute. You're talking to my doorbell.
My English teacher wanted to smoke me up in junior high.
Shakespeare!
Only problem was, I was already pretty fucking high. I took a shot of vodka with a chaser, made a bong out of an eraser, asked my teacher to spread her legs so I could taste her. Walked into the strip club, I was pretty fucked up. Started splashing around on people's drinks like a little bear cub.
Wow.
Extraterrestrials packing a bowl while they're saying, we ain't got the ship on Mars, you know. Whoa. 99% of my life I've been baked. At my wedding, I said, hey, fuck this shit, and ran straight for the cake. I told my wife our kids were gonna be junkies. Riding around in a Volkswagen and playing Kumbaya like a bunch of hippies.
You know you're really stoned when you can't feel your hands.
Where are my
running
hands?
Running around trying to figure out the meaning of your toenails, man.
Toe covers.
I went to White Castle and asked for a Happy Meal. Waitress said, we don't serve those here. I said, dude, what's the deal?
Stop the tape! I need to go roll a J! Hey, Dave, you got an extra nugget I could maybe take?
I already smoked it.
I don't want to come down. It's too fun to be high.
Nah,
I want to get baked every day for the rest of my life.
Big time corporate radio thug here from the land of corporate radio thuggery. We'd like to talk to you a little bit about these radio pirates. Don't you know we can't compete with these people if they're doing community interest programming, good local music, real news and variety. We need control of the airwaves so we can charge fat advertising rates, skew our ratings, and soak our greedy sponsors. Wait a minute. Space Station 5 is playing loud and clear in Amsterdam. Oh. Shit!
Okay, here on the table is Tech Spectre. I only know him by cyberspace or in cyberspace. We already worked together with the local TV.
Yes.
And the Spaceboat thing in Seattle.
Spaceboat TV in Seattle, Washington.
Okay.
In cooperation with DDS and also the crews at Engage.
and some other good people over here on the European continent. Some of the finest collaborations that we've ever done over the
internet. Non-corporates!
Non-corporate, yeah!
And that's the way it works. Media is much more nicer without... You have to buy this, you have to buy that, etc. So we can just have nice music.
Real news.
Yes.
The truth.
The truth.
When we get a chance. We're breaking the media blockade.
I don't know if there is anything that is something like the truth. I think we only can deal with facts.
With facts. This is true. But if we tell the facts, then people are allowed to decide on their own. We're not shoving it down their throats.
That's true. So you come from Seattle all the way to here.
All the way here.
Why leaving Seattle?
Why would anybody leave Seattle? Seattle, Washington was a very special case. Back in about 1997, 1998, things got rolling. We were all going 100 miles an hour towards that pot of gold.
Doing and, what?
Well, working our butts off, doing the dot-com thing, you know, out partying, spending lots of money. 100 miles an hour when the economy fell, it was 100 miles an hour over the edge of the cliff. And down we all went. And if there was anything cool about Seattle, I think that the dot-com phenomenon probably put the cap on it, and it'll be years before Seattle really wakes up again and develops any kind of good culture.
We hope
for Seattle. We still hold hope. But wait, now we're in Europe.
Everything collapses anyway in Seattle, so you thought, like, well, fuck, I'm going to leave this sinking ship.
Well, you said, all of my friends on my way out of Seattle, if you decide to leave, make sure and turn out the lights. Seattle's used to that. They have an economy that goes up and down. Boeing often lays people off depending on whether or not they have contracts, and Seattle will recover in its time. But, you know, now here we are in Europe where the people are sexy, the beer is cheap, the food is delicious, and the sun is shining! Hell 2001!
Yeah, it has been all the time. My God, what do you think you're going to do in Europe? How do you think you're going to survive? Because it's not so easy, and there's a lot of people coming from abroad.
Call me ambitious. I'm here to build a micro radio network, an internet-based micro radio network with stations participating around the globe. We'll be using centralized programming facilities, probably in Amsterdam, perhaps in cooperation with some of these people that we've been working with in the past, and start setting up small relay stations around the world where it is legal to do micro radio as a collective.
Mm-hmm.
And each of the stations will feed back its own programming to master control. And then
master control.
Yes,
terrible.
Well, we must contain control. After all, we are the big corporate radio thugs in becoming. You know,
my God, don't go there, Dex Hector. Don't go there. But there is already a sort of network micro radio stations across Europe doing their thing.
Yeah.
Most of them are pirates, and some of them are public access radios.
Yeah.
So you're going to involve them in the network.
One would hope that we could do this collectively and to our best interests, and also in the interest of, again, breaking the media blockade. You can definitely see evidence of the large corporate broadcasters moving into Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest very strongly that everybody out there, all you good people, should probably do everything that you can to prevent the large companies out of the United States, specifically Infinity and Clear Channel, from gaining a foothold here, because once they've done that, then they start messing with your laws, they start buying off your politicians, and then, you know, here's Space Station 5. You have a legal permit to do this, an event permit. There isn't even a mechanism in the United States to get that. There's nobody to ask. It's just not even an option.
Hmm.
So don't let the big corporations get a hold of your airwaves. You hold
they
on to
them. They already do, actually.
Well, do what you can.
Yes, and that's, I think, what piracy is all about.
Well, yeah.
Are you a pirate in the core?
Oh, yeah. We all, back in Seattle, when the name of the station is Black Ball Radio, and we all have to sing the Black Ball Radio theme song, yeah, we're pirates. These large corporate broadcasters, eventually, by plying intimidation tactics, had us hopping from rooftop to rooftop in Seattle doing pirate radio. The climate there is very different,
mm-hmm.
very hostile for people doing free radio in Seattle. Quite fortunately, we have a long tradition in Seattle of free radio and a lot of community support, especially around the anti-globalization movement.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these projects were born of the anti-globalization movement and continue to support the movement as it's, you know, in and out.
But what's the importance of having radio? Because everybody here, there's a few listening actually to this radio. A lot of people are just doing their internet thing and communicating another way. What's the importance of radio?
Oh, radio is so important because radio is a ubiquitous technology. Not everybody out there can afford a computer. Computers cost, what did he say, $500? You can go down to the local thrift shop and buy a ghetto blaster for, what, maybe 5 guilders used. Anybody can listen to the radio. You can take it with you in your car. You can do all kinds of things while you listen to the radio that you can't, you know, you're not tied to a computer.
And they're even so small. You
and
can
they're so small you
tuck
can
them
slip
away
it in your pocket. That's
and
right.
And still listen to the world.
Yeah.
Okay, but then the content, of course, is a very important thing. Okay, so you're going to try to start up a micro radio network over the whole world, but there's
yes.
a lot of places I can imagine where radio is not so easy, and even state dangerous, you're enemy of the state if you're going to do your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine in Eastern Europe or like in other places like Turkey or more severe countries. How do you see that happening?
By and large, I think that's going to depend a lot on the people on the ground in those places, whether they're willing to take the risks there. And we certainly don't encourage people to take risks that are, we don't encourage them to jeopardize their lives. There certainly are places in this world where if you open up a pirate radio station, you're going to lose your head.
Mm-hmm.
No, let's not go there. I think the best game plan here is to develop the network in places where it is legal, where people don't incur those liabilities, and have a big old functioning working model of the network that we can then show off to the rest of the world and say, hey, look, we don't need the large corporate media to do this. We can do this. The people can take back the airwaves. And perhaps in the end, and it may take generations for all we know, the tide will turn. But the best game plan, I think, right now is to build it without putting people at risk and then show it off to the rest of the world and say, hey, look at this cool thing that we built. We can do this. Why don't you?
How expensive is a transmitter?
A transmitter, you can buy or build a transmitter for about 500 guilders.
How many watts?
Oh, 4 to 15 watts, depending on your preference. We found in Seattle, Washington, that with a 4-watt transmitter positioned properly with a good antenna, we had about a 15-mile footprint, at least on radios that have digital tuning.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very efficient way to do it. It wasn't interfering with any of the other broadcasters' signals, and yet it was perfectly clear within the Seattle metropolitan area and very economical. That transmitter cost us about 300 guilders to put together.
I know another radio station from the United States called Free Radio Berkeley.
Yes.
And they are very busy with encouraging people, not really encouraging, but telling them how to build your own micro radio transmitter.
Yes, that's Stephen Dunifer down in San Francisco. He is an infamous West Coast radio pirate and also a fine friend of ours. And he has fought long and hard, both on the streets and in court, to protect our rights to free speech and our rights to free media distribution, and he deserves a lot of praise.
Yeah, did he get off the hook at the end of the story?
I'm sorry?
Did he get off the hook at the end of the story?
Stephen Dunifer is one slippery character. I don't think he ever really was on the hook. His advice to us coming out of the barn when we first opened the station was build a fortress around yourself and then hide someplace else.
I've visited Free Radio Berkeley, and they weren't in a sort of a bunker or anything. They were just in a sort of living room with windows and everything. So,
well, sometimes a fortress isn't so much where you live or hold up. It's who you know and how you play your game.
Okay. Well, I wish you a lot of luck with getting everybody in Europe together.
Thank you very much.
To start up, getting the network bigger, because there's already a little network. So, Tex Spector.
Thank you very much, Liz.
Thank you. Okay, he almost said my name. And we're still pirate radio. We have a permit to transmit here on Space Station 5. I think we switch back to their crew in their radio tent. And I'm very curious what's going to happen after this. Stay tuned to your radio. It's the 97.3. .1 to say .fm. So tune in. Thank you.
Hello, here's Radio Space Station 5 again. The crew right behind the ASCII tent in the Space Station 5 tent, and very grateful thanks to the ASCII crew. It was a very great show. We enjoyed it. And I think we should go on with some music here and try to make up a program then.
Thank you. don't you? Don't!
Hi, people sent us email. Here's an email from a guy. He said, oh, you wonderful girl at hell. I want to meet you again. Please meet me at IRC. Also, listen, little girl, if you want to meet your boy, just go to the IRC and you will meet him again. Space Station 5, the best sender, the number one on the hell ground. Yeah, we just forget to tell you the DNS security workshop just starts at the workshops. If you want to contribute, oh, broken English is very difficult, you and want to meet Olaf Kolkman, you go now to the workshop.
We got some trouble with our jingle machine, but never mind. I have got an interview partner right now, Imko. you are from the network crew. That's right.
That's right.
And you can tell us something about the field network here. So basically, what is this for field network? What's outgoing connection, and what is this for an internal network here?
Okay. First of all, the internal network is, everybody can get a 100 megabits switched port, and these are in turn connected to a 1 gigabit glass fiber connection, and these glass fiber connections are in turn connected to 4 1-gigabit uplinks to our main router, which has a 1-gigabit uplink to the outside world. So that's basically, in real short terms, the network.
And how did you set up this equipment? Where does it come from? Did you buy it, borrow it?
All the equipment was borrowed from companies like Extreme Networks, Foundry, Juniper, Freecom, Cisco, basically every big network company there is. And we all managed to borrow it through contacts of the people who are currently working in the networking crew.
Okay, and how long did it took to take this all here up?
We started building the network on early Tuesday, and that's when we set up the main glass fiber links. And throughout Wednesday and early Thursday, we finished the glass fiber network and installed the switches in the red cabins. You may have seen them, and that's where people can connect.
Okay, and I think this is a hacker convention, and of course there are a lot of wild traffic is going around. What are the main problems you have to fight it with?
The biggest problem is people who are spoofing their MAC addresses, so having a fake address for their network adapter, which provides the largest problems. But our abuse team is well prepared for this, so we can find anybody who does that in a quick, fairly fast. So it shouldn't provide a really big problem.
And if someone spoofs an address, what are your basic actions then when you found the person? Or do you going to the cable and try to find out where this traffic comes from, or how do you do it?
We have ways to find out from which switch port that traffic comes. And of course, we'll then hunt them down and ask them really nicely to stop doing that.
And how many cases were there?
I'm not sure, a few, maybe two, maybe three bad cases where people tried to fake the address of the main router, but that's basically it.
Yeah, so along yesterday I think there was a complete breakdown of the internet. What's there happening?
That was a configuration error on the outside link. In technical terms, there was a BGP filter which was a bit too tight, so it also started dropping our own sessions. So let's just say somebody made a configuration error.
Okay, so these are also things you have to deal with, of course.
Yes, the network we have is quite big. Currently there are about 2,200 computers connected to the network, about 800 of which are wireless, and this is a huge network, and when you have a huge network like this, it usually takes a few days to a few weeks to stabilize the configuration to get everything right. We don't have that time right now, so there may be some glitches left in configurations, and we're still finding them.
I think you mentioned the wireless network. I think it's the first time for a convention here in the hell style where there's such a big a wireless network. How many base stations are there providing this traffic?
I believe we have about 50 base stations.
And where are they set up?
They're set up everywhere around the campsite. Mainly in the red cabins, in the main tent, of course. There's a lot of them. I believe this is it's at least the biggest wireless rollout that I've ever seen or ever heard of.
So this wireless network in the first time I see it in a larger scale was in the Chaos Communication Camp a year ago.
And in 1999.
Yeah.
2 years ago.
Yeah. So in the year-changing time. It was quite interesting to see the people. So, you know, in the Chaos Communication Camp, there's a big cinema where are played movies at night, and it was quite interesting to see the people. If you stand upstairs, everybody was sitting watching the movie and had a laptop on his laptop. it was a great deal. I think it changed a lot in the behavior of the people.
Well, it's also funny to note that using wireless has also rapidly become fairly normal. So people are no longer doing silly things with it. People just sit down and next to a table and start using their laptop instead of walking around with a laptop, which is a silly thing to do.
In case of using wireless network equipment, so don't you have any bigger problems when there is an app spoofing going around? When you note it's coming from a base station.
Well, let's just say we have a few interesting tricks up our sleeve to take care of that.
And the DAR?
Well, I'm not going to tell you about them, of course. One of the main reasons I'm not telling you is I'm not the complete expert on...
Yeah? Go on.
Okay. I'm not the complete expert on the wireless issue, so... there are a few people who know everything about wireless, and they are currently keeping our network alive, which at this moment means we have to reboot the base stations every once in a while.
Okay. So how long is this network still going on? You're going to Monday and then we'll shut it down?
We're not sure about that yet. We'll probably take it down somewhere Monday morning, maybe the night on Sunday, between Sunday and Monday. We're not sure yet.
Okay, so at least where's your tent? If any person got a question, where's the network crew located here?
The network crew is located between, next to the main tent. You have a road behind the main tent, and take a right there. There's a large sign saying FHQ, and that's where the network people hang out.
Okay, so thank you for the interview, and yes, I hope you don't have any troubles so far, and in the next time.
Okay.
Thank you.
No
and,
problem.
Have fun on the camp.
Thank you.
Either you are working here. Have fun. Bye. Yeah.
To get acid, you can get it anywhere.
Okay, this is Michael from Space Station 5, and I like to tell you of three speeches which are starting at 1930. First, there is speaking about SSR traffic analysis at stage 1. At stage 2 is a speaking which is called the story space, and at stage 3 you can take part in RSE prevention course.
We'll be right back.
universe of numbers that represents the global economy. Millions of human hands at work, billions of minds, a vast network screaming with life. An organism. A natural organism. $12.50, press return.